Hello everyone, and thanks for tuning into UBS Global Research Pod Hub, a channel that shares insights from economists, strategists, and equity analysts on the pivotal questions and events shaping today's markets. My name is Sunil Tirumalai, head of EM and Asia Equity Strategy at UBS Research. And I'm here with Phyllis Wong, China Industrials Analyst, and Randy Abrams, head of Taiwan Research. In this episode, we are going to be taking a high-level look at humanoid robots to see how the science fiction is now turning into reality. Phyllis, I'd like to start with you to set the big picture context for the discussion. Now, robots have featured in science fiction and Hollywood movies for at least a few decades, but it's generally been in the realm of fiction. Why are we looking at this topic now? From an investor perspective, if you could talk about the big numbers in terms of the total addressable market.
Thanks, Sunil. We are writing on the topic as we have witnessed a rapid humanoid development in the past 1 to 2 years, mainly catalyzed by technological advancement, especially for AI development, attempts to land in different business scenarios, a sharp drop in humanoid hardware cost, fundraising, and new model launches. We actually anticipate a global population of more than 300 million by 2050, implying a US$1.7 trillion market for an ecosystem, spanning components and OEMs, software, production, and services.
Randy, now this 1.7 trillion total addressable market is indeed pretty significant. I'm guessing a decent chunk of that market is likely to be semis and other tech hardware components. From a layman's perspective, what are the most important semi and tech hardware components that go into a robot body? And how would the performance requirements on these compare with something more tangible for our listeners, like a top-end smartphone?
Right, Sunil. So if we compare a humanoid to a high-end smartphone or PC, the semiconductor content could be as much as 6 to 7 times higher. We estimate a bill of materials of chip content of $1,400. That would be compared to an iPhone or a PC, may have $200 to $250. And think of this, it's more like a high-end autonomous driving car, which we're still trying to get to, although in some ways even more complex. A car has to just stay on the road. A humanoid has to move a complicated body through a very diverse environment. The most important components then from a chip perspective, central to that, I would say, is the brain, which is the main system on chip. It needs to integrate a processor, graphics engine, and also an AI engine. And to think of it, it needs to be able to think both fast to avoid tripping on object, or slow to, say, reason out how to do a job. The latest chips could have AI processing tops of 1,000, an AI smartphone or PC, only 50 to 70. The other components, I'd say, within it, if we think also, again, like a high-end car, it needs to have the connectivity. So in this case, Wi-Fi or Ethernet, storage, which would include 32 to 128 gigabyte of DRAM and up to terabyte of solid-state drive. And then also the camera, which are the eyes to see the environment. We could have 6 to 10 cameras, both for the main ones in the eyes, but also for the arms and legs. And then like a vehicle, microcontrollers to control the joints and analog to convert the signals that are coming out to digital and also to regulate the power in the battery.
Well, for a minute, you had me looking at my arms and legs from a whole new perspective right there. Anyway, let's talk about numbers now. We are now seeing AI making a material uplift to the top lines of semis firm. Taking those TAM numbers that Phyllis just gave us, what does this mean for the addressable market for semis across these targeted years? How big can demand from robotics grow over time as a proportion of revenues for the semiconductor industry?
Okay, for the demand environment, if we take the units that Phyllis has laid out, the humanoid opportunity would scale initially to start toward 1 million units in 2035 and then inflect to 86 million in 2050. Now, coming back to content, we expect that 1,400 in silicon content could even rise a bit, 1-2% rate toward $2,000, as the humanoid will need to get more intelligent over time. Now, if we pull that in, the opportunity would scale at the start this year, very tiny, $20 million. But by the out period, by 2050, this would be $177 billion. That's 28% of the current chip industry size. And I would say AI does have potential to pull in that case. In our upside case, instead of 86 million in 2050, we get closer to 200 million in 2050. At that, we'd have 575 billion of semiconductor content. That's about 92% of the industry size. So if we compare even on the base case, we start to get to be as important as a smartphone or PC as we look out, say, two decades from now. And again, I would point to AI. Now that we're starting to use simulation to simulate the environment and also more AI on device processing, potentially we could see these pull in over the next few years.
That's a useful reference point, Randy. So basically, this can become as big a demand driver for the industry as smartphones or PCs are today. Phyllis, coming back to you, what are the applications that you foresee picking up first? I'm sure we all would love to have robotic butlers at home or robo soccer buddies for our kids. When will that become a real revenue driver for the industry?
We expect commercialization to start in industrial and service scenarios. We think humanoids are unlikely to enter households within 5 years, as household humanoids have high requirements in terms of generalization, product safety, and the relevant implementation regulations and the cost. Our view is supported by our study of use cases and the comparisons with autonomous driver. We see some similarities between autonomous driver and humanoid brains. UBS auto team expect autonomous driver to reach level 4 partially on robotaxi by 2030, while we think humanoid may require more time to reach level 4 with humanoid household applications more applicable after 2035.
Randy, now focusing on the AI part of the theme, are there any specific challenges to the training needs in robotics? I'm guessing it'll be very application specific.
For the training in robotics, Hans Moravec in the 1980s made an observation that still applies for robotics. And what that is, it's what's difficult for humans is easy for machines. But what is easy for humans is difficult for machines. And I take the compare. Machines are very good solving complex math and coding. A lot of us had difficulty with that. But then easy for humans, a lot of things that babies can do by the time they're 3 or 4, just moving around, sensing, reacting to the environment with intuition, that's difficult for machines. Robots, traditionally very fixed function, a lot programmed in software. Now, only in the last year or two, we're starting to see AI being used to simulate the diverse environments and also improve, I'd say, the compute intensity, where we essentially have to create these where we can wire the processor to control all the actuators and joint movements at incredibly fast speed, low latency, and also a high degree of accuracy. That's a development that we're seeing happen, but is taking time. And I'd say it's just proven it's not as easy for machines to really simulate the tasks and perform these at high speed as good as, say, our humans or even babies are able to do.
And Phyllis, now looking at the broader ecosystem questions, new tech adoption always needs a supportive regulatory environment and probably some state incentives. Where are we on the regulatory evolution for this technology?
It is earlier to talk about this in most of the countries. As you mentioned, humanoid robot is still a new technology, new products are still in early stage of development. But we also see some change in several countries with rapid technology development in the past 2 to 3 years, especially from AI technology. For example, the Chinese government is supportive of the humanoid robot development, and a lot of local government also introduced action plans to support embodied AI. The U.S. administration's desire to bring back manufacturing to the U.S. conflicts with the tight immigration policy, which could be better resolved with supplemental investment in automation and robotics. For Japan, Korea, and the EU, we believe government should be also willing to promote this product.
And which economies are ahead of the curve, basically where adoption could be faster?
Overall speaking, we believe the developed market should adopt humanoids faster than ex-China emerging market due to their more serious demographic problems and the faster development of AI technology. By country, we expect China and the US to lead a humanoid development globally. Both are the most active countries in terms of humanoid and AI investment, with the majority of startups over the past few years in these two countries.
And now, Randy, coming back to you with a very basic question. Now, what is the need for a robot that looks like a human with two hands, two legs, a torso, and a head? Our bodies have evolved over millennia, specializing for very specific purposes. Can't the industry think of a design or a fresh design that is more efficient for the machine's purposes?
So the humanoid form, Sunil, that's a good question, why we actually look at it, why we're developing exactly like we are. And the key for that is we also have developed our environments really to benefit from the humanoid structure, just the home, the office, industrial. A lot of that is navigated by us with 2 feet, 2 arms. We don't have to redesign simple things like our doorknobs or our machine tools or our kitchens for that form factor. And I'd say that last part, if we're going to be putting them into our home or our industrial, the connectivity with humans still works together well on a task, being able to communicate in certain things like eye contact or gestures. Now, it still brings up problems. Balancing on two legs is bad. It's very tough to do. It's not that stable. So the key will be, it won't just be humanoid. In fact, we're already seeing the company start to develop other forms. And a few ones I think to expect to see. Some of the robotics companies have the four-legged companions, just like we have with the dog. But that can be efficient for carrying heavy objects or for logistics. Some may have wheels. We also could see for challenging terrain a spider, multiple legs. And then the same way, factory, technically, a lot of these robotics only have one arm. Do we need two? So some factory tools will continue the process one arm. And then I'll say for very tight areas, the snake. Handling inspections, that can slither its way through for that type. And then I'd say in the future, if we could develop it, just like we have drones, we could see more flying objects. So again, it's going to be diverse, but we lay out the case in coming back to the human, flexible for our environment. And if we're starting to think about general capabilities to do a lot of different tasks, if we put it in the home or in our work environment, that's where that form, I think, can be the most flexible.
Thank you, Randy and Phyllis. And thanks to our listeners for visiting the UBS Research Pod Hub. That was an overview of our views on the future of humanoid robots with me, Sunil Tirumalai, Phyllis Wong, and Randy Abrams from UBS. If you enjoyed this episode, please tune in again and share this episode with a friend or a colleague. Have a good day.
This content has been prepared by UBS AG, its subsidiaries, and/or affiliates, and is purely informational in nature. It is not investment research and does not contain an investment recommendation nor investment or professional advice. It is not an offer or solicitation to engage in any investment activity, and you should seek your own financial, tax, and legal advice before engaging in any such activity. UBS has no responsibility to you in relation to this content. It has no regard to your personal circumstances or investment objectives, and receiving it does not imply any form of client relationship with UBS for any legal, regulatory, or tax purpose. This content is not intended for distribution into any jurisdiction where to do so would be contrary to law or regulation. UBS does not accept any liability over the content of such material or reliance upon any information contained herein. The views and opinions expressed by any guest speaker or third party are not those of UBS. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over any such views and opinions expressed by such persons. This content is the valuable intellectual property of UBS, and UBS specifically prohibits the redistribution of it in whole or in part without its prior written permission. UBS 2025, the key symbol and UBS are among the registered and unregistered trademarks of UBS. All rights reserved.